CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up in the program, a UBC professor is working to help Afghanistan conserve its trees, and opposition parties in Vancouver are working together to defeat Sam Sullivan. We'll have all this, plus sports and your five-day weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. This month, Professor Gary Bull from UBC's Faculty of Forestry will be in Afghanistan, helping to conserve that country's trees. Bull is heading to the northeast province of Nuristan to lead an effort to help protect and restore the forests there. The past 20 years have been turbulent for Afghanistan. The conflict and resulting economic strife have led to deforestation rates in a country of up to 70%. Bull will try to turn this trend around. His job will be to deploy Afghani enumerators to conduct surveys among the Nuristan villages. The data they will collect will help researchers determine what financial incentives will allow the local people to restore and protect their local forests. Now, with a look at other local news, we're joined in studio by Carrie Baptist, Tracy Fuller, and Rita Farkas.
Opposition parties are meeting to discuss cooperating in an effort to defeat current Mayor Sam Sullivan. COPE and Vision Vancouver officials are debating running joint campaigns with a single mayoral candidate and electoral strategies in the next election. This unprecedented cooperation is designed to meet the party's common goal of putting a new face in the mayor's seat. Several people have expressed interest in running for the job under a unified left-leaning banner. They include Park Board Commissioner Alan DeGenova, Councillor David Cadman, and NDP MLA Gregor Robertson. COPE member Ellen Woodsworth says that a broadcasted coalition is the only way to defeat Sullivan.
Vancouver NPA Councillor Kim Capri says it might not be long before Vancouver slumlords' names will be published for all of Vancouver to see. Capri thinks that Vancouver tenants have a right to know if managers of rental accommodations in the city have a reputation of being a problematic landlord. The entire nonpartisan association will be asking the city's legal department if the names can be published and made available for public use. Capri hopes that the measure will be a way to maintain the best standards possible for rental accommodation in Vancouver. So a list like the one she is proposing may never need to be used.
And efforts to rejuvenate Stanley Park are continuing this week. The park was reopened last week after the devastating windstorms last fall left sections of it closed off. Now the Vancouver Park Board is preparing to plant 3,000 young trees in the Prospect Point area, which was the hardest hit area in the park during last year's storms. The 3,000 seedlings will be coming as a donation from local forestry group PRT Incorporated. In addition, Brinkman and Associates is volunteering time to plant the seedlings. In total, the park is set to receive 10,000 donated trees, which will all be scheduled to be planted by the spring of next year. The efforts follow thousands of trees which were knocked down or uprooted last year. Following the storm, the park received some controversy over how best to deal with the damaged areas. Many argued removing the fallen trees was detrimental to the ecosystems of the park.
In the midst of the controversy surrounding the death of Polish immigrant Robert Sikanski after he was tasered by four members of the RCMP, the Vancouver Police Department has put in an order for 70 more taser guns. The VPD currently possesses 40 of the devices and are expecting the new shipment to arrive from the manufacturer in Arizona next month. VPD spokesman Constable Tim Fanning says that the tasers will be given to the 110 officers who have been trained to use them, instead of the current system where the names of all eligible officers are placed in a draw. Fanning says that having a personal issue taser for each eligible officer will make them more accountable for their use. The Arizona-based company who manufactures the tasers says that there is still no proof that their product has caused a death.
BC Hydro has set a wide target to reduce power usage by over 20% in the next 13 years. BC Hydro Executive Vice President Bev Van Royven says that the figures represent an ambitious but doable goal that needs to be achieved. Van Royven says that on a per capita basis, British Columbians use more electricity than almost anywhere else in the world. Government employees, hospital workers, and teachers will all be encouraged to remember to turn off their lights, their computers, and watch their thermostats as part of the new energy reduction plan. The project will also hire 20 so-called energy managers to audit buildings across the province for their energy consumption. And many of the 6,500 publicly owned buildings in the province will also be retrofitted to make them more energy efficient. Van Ruyven hopes that the energy saved through this initiative will save enough energy to power 34,000 homes by the year 2020. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Ever wonder what happened to all those Broadway musical characters that ended up alone?
Yes, tell me.
They came together in a brand new performance. In this show, written and directed by Megan Crosby, characters including Amos Hart from Chicago and the Phantom from Phantom of the Opera join in unexpected ways.
I heard there's going to be amazing singing, acting, and dancing for a show you won't want to miss.
The show is called That's Another Story, and it's playing Friday, November 23rd and Saturday, November 24th at the Scarf Building at UBC. For more information or to purchase tickets, please email gs_tickets@yahoo.ca or visit the website at www.gsubc.ca.
It's going to be the world premiere of the original cast.
Hey, Pete, want to go to a concert?
What do you think, Sally?
I think that's a yes. To the Music in Motion concert, that is.
That's the benefit concert happening in support of BC's Children's Hospital.
It's going on Saturday, December 8th in the evening, and takes place at Capilano College in the Performing Arts Theater.
We are so there, as we love music and giving out our support.
Some of the artists playing include Drew McKay and Soulful Rebellion.
Sounds like a fun night.
Oh yeah. Come hear some music and support BC's Children's Hospital.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:13. With more on provincial news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporter Tracy Fuller.
The provincial NDP wants more female and minority candidates to run for the party in the next election. Delegates at the annual party convention approved the plan to increase the diversity of the party's slate. The resolution adopted says that when a new Democratic MLA does not seek re-election, the riding must choose a female candidate. For the remaining ridings, 30% will be designated for female candidates and an additional 10% for visible minorities and gays and lesbians. Party leader Carol James says the majority of the party leadership supported the motion, but rank-and-file members complained that the move will lead to a loss riding associations. Autonomy over candidate selections. Critics also argued that the party should be able to choose the best candidate regardless of their race or gender, and that this affirmative action policy was just another type of discrimination. However, when a vote was called, 3/4 of the delegates supported the motion.
And New Democrat MLA Gregor Robertson introduced 2 private members' bills today designed to force companies to label the toxic ingredients in their products. Robertson says he was inspired by a report called Polluted Children, Toxic Nation, conducted by the group Environmental Defense, which found as many as 30 different toxic residues in his children's bodies. Robertson argues that it is a fundamental property of a democracy that the public is informed about what toxic substances they are being exposed to. Many common household products such as nail hardeners or mothballs contain known carcinogens. There is evidence from other jurisdictions such as California, which have enacted similar legislation, that when companies are forced to label toxic chemicals in their products, the manufacturer often reformulates their products. BC Health Minister George Abbott says he will wait to see the proposed legislation before commenting.
From now on, Canadian athletes who win an Olympic medal will be awarded a cash prize by the Canadian Olympic Committee. The Olympic Committee hopes to reward athletes for their success, and they feel that financial compensation is important, as many Olympic athletes train for years with only receiving a little pay. Starting at the 2008 Beijing Olympics, a gold medal winner will receive $20,000, a silver medal winner $15,000, and bronze $10,000. If the Olympic Committee had given out these prizes for the medals won at the 2006 Turin Winter Olympics, it would have cost them $360,000.
A proposal to build a nuclear power plant in Peace County, Alberta, has residents scared and angry of the effects nuclear power will have on their province and the rest of Canada. 100 residents of the Alberta community protested outside the provincial legislature today, concerned about the lack of public involvement in the consultation process. Representatives of the Energy Alberta Corporation, the company which owns the sole rights from the Atomic Energy Company of Canada to build a reactor in Alberta, have met with members of the provincial government to discuss plans for the reactor. However, the number and content of those meetings are unclear, and Alberta residents and politicians are beginning to get suspicious of Conservative government's actions behind closed doors. Protest organizer Brenda Bochu stated that numerous rural politicians who campaigned for Energy Alberta to consider their town as a possible site for the reactor were voted out in this October provincial election.
And in international news, a Japanese whaling fleet is set to sail towards the Antarctica in its largest scientific whaling expedition ever. Shimonoseki, a four-ship fleet, plans to kill up to 50 humpbacks, 935 minks, and 50 fin whales during this trip, which is scheduled to last until the spring. But the fleet has met with massive protests internationally as many are concerned about the fragility of the humpback whale. A moratorium was placed on whaling humpbacks in 1963 because of their proximity to extinction. The whale was protected by the International Whaling Commission since 1986. The American Cetacean Society now estimates the population to have recovered to approximately 30 to 40,000, which is about a third of the population that existed before modern whaling began. The species is now listed as vulnerable by the World Conservation Union. In response to Japan's whaling mission, Greenpeace says it plans to bring its Esperanza ship to the Antarctica for protesting. Japan has said the killing will support research into the reproductive and feeding patterns of the species, but critics are saying this is only an excuse to cover up commercial whaling efforts.
With the U.S. Army desertion rate increasing by a staggering 42% since 2006, recruiters are looking to replace their lost soldiers with students from high schools across the United States. However, they are encountering with more resistance than they anticipated. Melinda Tuhus from FSRN reports.
Although it isn't over yet, 2007 has already become the deadliest year for American troops in Iraq. As the conflicts grind on, the U.S. military needs to find replacements for the nearly 3,900 men and women in uniform who have died. Tens of thousands of soldiers have been severely injured or finished their military hitches and not reenlisted. On top of this loss of military personnel, the number of U.S. Army soldiers going AWOL has jumped 80% since the U.S. invaded Iraq. The Pentagon announced this weekend that about 4,700 soldiers deserted this year, a 42% jump since just 2006. Without a draft, recruiters are looking to replace the lost soldiers in high schools all over the country. But as Melinda Tuhus reports from New Haven, Connecticut, those efforts are encountering disinterest on the part of many youth and active opposition from others.
Military recruitment is a tough sell around much of the U.S., but it has hit a wall in New Haven public schools.
We haven't done very well in the last couple of years in New Haven.
That was Sergeant Major William Bernard, who's in charge of National Guard recruiting for the state of Connecticut. He says young people respond to a variety of pitches.
Money for college, patriotism, job skills, it varies.
But at the moment, inner-city students, a majority of whom are African-American and Latino, are not responding much at all. Bernard says recruiters now spend more time in the suburbs, in schools where students are more likely to pass the test known as the ASVAB, or Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, and in schools that are receptive to having military recruiters come in. Under the No Child Left Behind law, schools are required to provide military recruiters access to students and to their personal contact information. But in New Haven, the Board of Education allows counter-recruiters equal access to the buildings. And at the beginning of every school year, the district sends parents a letter informing them of their right to put their children on a no-call list. The school official in charge estimates that in the past 2 years, 20% of parents of the district's 2,500 juniors and seniors have done so, and only a few graduates have joined the military. But recruiters still find ways to contact those on the no-call list, including several who are the children of longtime peace activists and are activists in their own right. For example, last month, senior Keely Colville accompanied her father to North Carolina to the headquarters of Blackwater USA to protest the company's involvement in the killing of unarmed civilians in Iraq. A recruiter had called her home and spoken to her mother.
I'm nonviolent and all, but hearing that they called and I had signed the paper saying don't call me, I got angry, you know?
Amy Allison served in the Army during the Persian Gulf War and was honorably discharged as a conscientious objector. Now she travels the country as one half of a team giving workshops called Army of None, which is also a book of the same name, sharing counter-recruitment strategies.
The military's done quite a bit of research to identify propensed youth, that's youth that are more likely to join the military, and those are people who don't have another visible path to college or job opportunities.
She says the military is trying to appeal to a broad spectrum of young people.
But they're also a propensed youth who associate military with family, and they also associate the military as a way to serve their community, to protect their family. And not only, you know, low-income immigrants have been targets and their communities, but also middle-class youth who are finding that they want a sense of purpose and a good feeling about the role that they're playing in the world. And because of the overwhelming PR campaigns that surround them in every way in youth culture, they get the idea that the military is the only path.
At Terryville High School, in a more rural part of Connecticut, where most of the students are white, an active group of counter-recruiting students had a significant impact on the number of kids taking the ASVAB, the aptitude test that is a prerequisite for joining the military. Corey Shurek is now a freshman in college and was part of the counter-recruitment drive at Terryville, which informed students that they did not have to take the test.
We set up a table at lunchtime. Kids came up and we told them about it, and especially word of mouth. Word of mouth really works good in high school. I know a fourth of the junior class just didn't go to the exam room. They just went to class. I was one of them. And then a fourth, they went, but they just sat there. Like, they didn't fill it out, nothing. And then half of it did fill it out.
Counter-recruitment trainings are being held around Greater New Haven this fall to recruit young people and adults of all backgrounds to promote alternatives to military service and throw a wrench into the war effort. For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in New Haven.
And thanks, as always, to FSRN for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Jason Wang will tell us what's happening in UBC Athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
Welcome back to News 101. Sorry. Welcome back to News 101.
Okay. I'm Rita Farkas, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:27, and time to look back at the past weekend in UBC Athletics. Here's Jason Wong with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
Welcome to this Monday edition of Thunderbird UBC Varsity Sports Report, where we begin with the defending Canada West Pacific Division champions in men's basketball. The UBC Thunderbirds completed a two-game sweep of their Canada West opponents in the Prairies, led by their star fourth-year guard, Chris Dick. Dick accounted for 41% of UBC's scoring over the weekend. In Saturday's 86-71 win against the Manitoba Bisons, he scored a game-high 36 points on 11 of 17 shooting from the field, 6 of 7 from beyond the arc, along with 8 rebounds. That followed up Chris Dick's 31-point performance from Friday night's victory, 78-64 over the Winnipeg Westmen. Fourth-year post Bryson Cool chipped in a double-double, 16 points and 11 rebounds. The Thunderbirds improved to 7-1 on the season to lead the Canada West, the conference where they're ranked number 1, and nationally they're ranked number 4 in the CIS. Over to the women's side of UBC basketball, the Thunderbirds matched their male colleagues' performance, victorious in both games of the weekend series in the Prairies. They were paced by their star fifth-year guard, Erica McGinnis. In Saturday's 78-44 whipping of the Winnipeg Westmen, she had team highs of 15 points and 7 assists. That followed up her 19-point team-high performance in Friday night's 65-54 victory against the Manitoba Bisons. The T-Birds improved to 7-1 on the season, holding down second place in the Canada West Pacific Division, behind the defending CIS champions SFU Clan. Simon Fraser and UBC are also ranked 1 and 2 in the Canada West Conference as well as nationally in the CIS. But one category where the T-Birds lead SFU is in defense. The Thunderbirds limit their opponents to an average of only 56 points per game. This weekend, UBC returns home to War Memorial Gym to host a two-game series against the Thompson Rivers Wolfpack. They'll tip off at 6:15 on Friday night, followed by the men's matchup after 8 o'clock. Both games can be heard live right here on CITR Sports. From the hard court to the rink, UBC Thunderbirds men's hockey split a two-game series in Saskatoon against the Saskatchewan Huskies. They bounced back from a 3-1 loss on Friday to upset the conference leader in a 4-2 win on Saturday night, dealing Saskatchewan their first regulation loss of the season. Sophomore left winger Marc Deloge scored twice in UBC's win on Saturday, backed up by Francois Thouault's awesome goaltending, 36 saves on 38 shots. Rookie D-man Craig Lineker also chipped in with a goal and two assists. The Thunderbirds stand in third place in the Canada West Conference with a 7-5 record. They're 5 points behind the Alberta Golden Bears and just 1 point up on the Manitoba Bisons. Over now to the women's side of UBC hockey. The Thunderbirds split a two-game series in Edmonton against the Alberta Pandas, taking the conference leader to a shootout on both Friday and Saturday. UBC took the shootout decision to win 4-3 on Friday night, before the Pandas bounced back to edge the T-Birds 3-2 on Saturday. Over the two-game series against Alberta, Thunderbirds second-year goalie Melinda Choi made a combined 66 saves on 69 shots to give her team the 3 points over the weekend. UBC has this weekend off for some much-needed rest after playing 8 games over 4 consecutive weekends. They stand in 5th place in the Canada West with a 3-8-1 record. Shifting gears now to UBC volleyball, both the women's and men's teams completed homestand sweeps of the Saskatchewan Huskies over the weekend. Women's team improving to 6-1 on the season, good for 3rd place in the Canada West behind Manitoba and Calgary. They will be on the road in the Prairies to take on the Regina Cougars this weekend for a 2-game series. On the men's side, the Thunderbirds improved to a conference leading 6-2 on the season with a 2-point lead on Alberta. They have this weekend off to rest after playing 8 matches over 4 straight weekends to start the season. And finally, from the gym to the great outdoors, the NAIA Women's Cross Country Championships took place on Sunday in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Simon Fraser Clan defended their national title for the 5th straight season. UBC placed 5th overall as a team, and they were led by sophomore Sabrina Reeve, who led her team with a time of 18 minutes and 18 seconds on the cross-country track. On behalf of the sports department here at CITR, we invite you to join us again this Friday night when we bring you live basketball coverage starting at 6 o'clock after News 101. The Thunderbirds women's and men's teams will take on the Thompson Rivers Wolfpack. I'm Jason Wang, and that was your Monday edition of Thunderbird Eye, UBC Varsity Sports Reports.
And thanks to Jason for the sports. And before we wrap up tonight, we go to our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, and your 5-day weather forecast. Selena?
Things are gearing up for a cold week, but a dry one, as we get a break from the storms. Following a clearing overnight, the rest of the week will see a mix of sun and cloud. Highs will be around 6 degrees all week, and temperatures will go down to zero overnight. That's your weekend weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. Remember to check out our bake sale in the EOS building on November 28th. Back to you, Katie.
Thank you for the shameless self-promotion, Selena. And definitely everyone get out there and help our resident weather girl with her department and go to the bake sale. Thanks. And that's our program for November 19th, 2007. Today's newscast is brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us on Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM, CITR.